Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. We're going to have some opening remarks, talk about some tournament news. Then we're going to do a chapter pack review. And then finally, we're going to have some
closing comments. No, before you ask, we didn't just think this had to be a two-person intro. My recording software just loses the last 5 seconds of every recording now for no reason. So, this is episode 13, lucky 13, John. What news do we have for the world at large?
Spanish tournament finished.
That was the big tournament in Zaragoza, for those of you who don't pronounce it
Zaragoza,
like Spanish.
Yeah.
That was 46 players, and that was won by Boschman. Did you see what deck he was playing? Because that caught me off guard.
Yeah, he was playing a Targ HOD pit.
Yeah, I think we had a couple of guests slam pit recently. I think Justin Shearer was on, and we were agreeing with him that it's just not a very good deck in this meta because so many people are playing some of those big characters that just make it hard to use Dragon Pit, especially with Illithid apart.
Top 16 had a lot of big character decks. We had a couple Wildling decks. We had a Clansman deck. I think there was a Baratheon Wildling, a Stark Wildling, a Clansman.
Old Way, which generally doesn't care too much about burn.
Yeah.
No, I am surprised. I haven't seen the list. I don't know what restricted they were running either. But it just goes to show we don't know anything.
Yeah, we know nothing.
We know nothing. Speaking of knowing nothing. Actually, no, not speaking of knowing nothing. I don't really have anything else for news. I guess the chapter pack officially came out. That's news.
And we'll be talking about that today. Next week, we're going to have a champ on the show.
No, we always have two champs on the show.
Okay, we're going to have a third champ on the show.
Third champ on the show.
Yeah,
a world champ, no less. Yeah,
another world champ.
This is one of those very rare situations where we actually have our recording for next week mostly done a week in advance. This never happens.
Ever.
Like, remember when we started the podcast, John?
Oh, we had 15 recordings ready?
That's right, of which we used probably about 4, because they were out of date by the time we got to them.
Yeah, but now we run around with our heads cut off every week trying to find a new topic and talk about things.
Yeah. We probably have a Nate interview recorded somewhere that we just have forgotten about. That's just how disorganized we are. One other thing is that we're still playing around with sound because I'm working on a new computer and so on. We certainly fixed a lot of the problems that we had last week. I think it was a lot less work to edit this week, John.
Yes, much easier. No high-pitched squeaky noises.
We may have some volume issues we're still playing around with to get the balance just right from the previous settings. But it shouldn't be much more than a couple, 5 or 6 more episodes until we're okay. So we are joined today for the before last, the 20 of the 40 last cards for Game of Thrones First Edition. The House of Talons chapter pack by Tagore.
Hi.
Recurring guest Tagore, friend of the show. So, Tagore, care to start us off with the very first card?
Yeah, it's Sipramen Crane. So he's a 3-cost, 3-strength Baratheon character. He's had all 3 icons. He's Rainbow Guard and a Knight. He's immune to events. And at the beginning of the Dominance phase, I stand each Rainbow Guard character I control. So I think he's decent. He's unexciting. He's basically going to guarantee that the Rainbow Guard deck wins dominance if he hits the table. He's boringly efficient because he's a 3-for-3 and he has all icons. But he didn't really jump out at me as a sort of really, really broken card. I think it's decent.
I have him pegged as slightly better than decent in a knight's deck. You're going to use that knight trait. It's not that easy to get an intrigue icon as a knight without having to look elsewhere. Even if you don't have any other rainbow guards and you're just running a traditional knight suite, I still think standing himself will often be enough to claim dominance. So that's sort of like putting him as a pseudo-renown. And immune to events, both a plus and a minus, means you can't use things like direct assault on him, which are cards that I like to use in there. But he's competing with the other Sir Parman Crane, and in a deck that's not a knight's deck, I'm more likely to run the other one. So I think he slots nicely into a knight's deck.
Yeah, that's about the only time I use him again is a knight's deck for the intrigue icon. And that, more than anything else, is what I think is good about him.
I'm going to double check. How many knights are there with intrigue icons in the game? Danbera, there's the Watcher of the Nightfire and the Bastard of Night Song.
Yeah.
And you're frequently playing both. Oh, and Summer's Champion, but you're not playing him at all.
You're not playing Summer's Champion, yeah.
But you're probably also running Jamie and Eriso Card, Shadow's versions.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that's a couple more knights.
Yeah.
Don, want to give us the next one?
This one's actually great. Bitterbridge Encampment. 2-cost location, the trait, the reach. The text is, limited response. After you play a knight's character, kneel Bitterbridge Encampment. To search your deck for another knight character, reveal it and add it to your hand, then shuffle your deck afterwards. Wow. That, in a knight's deck, is crazy good. I mean, the fact that you get to search your whole deck for any knight for any given situation is sick, and all you have to do is play a knight for it. This is probably one of the defining cards of this chapter pack.
I agree. I think it makes Baron Knights a lot stronger relative to the other knight builds because of the ability to search up more knights. Yeah, searching up any knight is just great. So you can search up, say, a Preston Greenfield if you're running Kingsguard to give your knights a bit more reliability. You can also search up, say, Bastard of Night Song to get yourself just an extra bit of power grab and an intrigue icon.
Knights of the Flower so he doesn't kneel. Jamie so you get more draw. It's Baron all Dundarian. Great. Oh my god. It's such a good card.
There are great knights in this game. Yeah, I mean, if you start looking at conquest style decks, there are some very interesting things you can dig around for as well.
So easy to find dupes. And, you know, you play Knight of the Flowers, then you play a 1-cost knight. Bam, get another dupe of the Knight of the Flowers, slap that on.
So the question is not whether this card is good or not, because it is. It's whether you're going to HOD it or not.
Some people will. It's going to be good out of HOD.
Honestly, I think I just run it in a regular knight stack just to get a bit more, just to help dig knights out to, you know, keep the pressure on the phone.
And not at one of, probably two or three of in a knight stack.
I agree. Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's any limited response that would really take up that much. A knight deck we want to run.
Wasn't Offer of a Peach limited response? Yeah, nobody wants to run that.
But HOD is a real option for this card. It's that good.
I concur. I don't think I will play it as an HOD location.
But I think I played as a knight's agenda with it, but we might see some people with it. Yeah.
For me, that's the trade-off. It's that if I'm using HOD, I'm not using the Knight's Agenda. And if I have this card out, I really want to be playing the Knight's Agenda.
Yep. One little caveat is it doesn't work out with Shadow Knight, so it doesn't work with, say, the new Knight of Flowers.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you don't play the new Knight of Flowers.
Your other 8 knights have to, you know, the other 14 knights you have in your deck.
Yeah, I think that's... But it is a valid point, though. And then, it is a limited response, so within Barra, that's not a huge deal. But if you're going further afield, I mean, limited responses in Barra is Offer of a Peach, Brienne, maybe something from way back that nobody plays. So it's not a competition within the house.
No. This card is absolutely amazing.
However, the art on both of these and this next one have generally been pretty bad.
This card is bad.
A 0-cost attachment, Barra attachment, called In Renly's Name. This is a condition attachment. It says, attached to an opponent's character. Response, after attached character is declared as an attacker against you, claim 3 power for your house. And this, unfortunately, I mean, I've heard interesting things. People seem to like this card. I don't really. I'd generally rather use Utley. I think this gives your opponent the choice of saying, okay, this challenge is worth making. So it's more of a the character can't attack, and the opponent can play around that. It is a condition attachment. I don't think it's that good, but there's an absolutely hilarious thing about it, because I looked at it and I said, why on earth is this attached to an opponent's character? And then I thought about it for a second and said, if this is a naval character, then it could be jumping in against you, then giving you 3 power. That would be hilarious, but unfortunately it's prevented.
Yeah. I'm still not 100% sure why they actually let you jump in characters against you with naval icons. Either characters with naval and icons
because
against
this
you.
This is Game of Thrones, and the rules have to be needlessly convoluted.
And but yeah, this card, I think it's decent. I see.
Well, you're wrong.
Well, I don't think it's going to see play in many decks, but I think it's an interesting card that is. A very, very, very fun little anti-Voltron card. Like, if anyone ever shows up to a Beric, with a Beric tower deck, or as it's very called, the Hyperbaric Chamber deck.
But I think those decks generally run attachment hate.
Yeah. I think it was great 5 years ago.
I mean, this is not as reliable as a fishing net. It's, in most cases, worse than a Motley. I'd rather run Motley in the vast majority of cases.
But it actually hits characters that are immune to opponent's card effects because it doesn't actually target.
That is true. Yeah, it will work on the characters.
I guess, but really, that's not a reason to run it.
I don't know. Like, if you stick it on a Viper, on a Princess of Sunbed Viper, it is actually gonna. Give the Martell player a bit of pause before he throws it at you 3 times.
It'll just make him gas and gray his Viper, and you
exactly.
have to catch him fall off, and then
okay.
play him again.
Replay his Viper, yeah. No.
So, I have a proposal. We spoiled and discussed the next 3 cards at length, and in order to fit our chapter pack reviews into an hour, I would skip them and just say, Tagore, do you have any thoughts about those that we didn't mention on the cast for the Great Joy cards?
Well, not particularly.
All right. Well, then, do you want to give us the next card, the first of the Lanny cards?
Okay, so this is Milksnake. It is a 4 cost, a 3 strength, unique, rounds the character, has the Clansman and the Army trait. It has no attachment to get weapon, stealth. And response after you win a challenge in which Milksnake's participated, choose a Clansman card in your discard pile and return it to your hand. Well, I think this guy's funny. I think you can have some really silly shenanigans where you, throw away cards from your hand to say that you have a small hand in the opponent, and then you get them all back again after applying claim. I think he's definitely a 1x in most Clansman decks. I don't really see him in any other Lanny deck, but I don't see most Clansman in any other Lanny decks either.
Well, yeah, his ability relies specifically on Clansmen, so without other Clansmen, he has no value. Because 4 for a 3-strength stealther isn't that great. But 4 for a 3-strength stealther with that ability, if you're running other Clansmen, is actually really good.
This is the first of the Clansmen cards that convinces me that... So up to now, they've introduced some really good Clansmen cards. They've reduced the card that helps reduce Clansmen and lets you draw a card that slots into any Clansmen deck. They've reduced the cheap Clansmen. He slotted it into any. They reduced the one that lets you draw up to your opponent's number of cards. He slots into any. This is the one that drives me towards saying, yeah, I'm going to do this aloof and apart right now. Because before I wasn't convinced. And I think this one sort of pushes me over the key that if I want to run the Clansman deck, I'm going to build it out of aloof and apart. Now, I still haven't. But it's eventually going to hit a saturation point where that deck has enough of this redundancy, card draw, card discard, card recursion, that it becomes a really formidable force. And this might be the card that just nudges it that little extra distance.
It's getting very close, and this card may push it over the line. We'll have to see. Because this card is very solid.
Yeah.
I mean, you already have Timmy, who's great. Gunther, who's fun. The Burn Men, which are hilarious when you're paying 3 for them. So yeah, I think this would definitely be very interesting in the Clansman deck.
All right. So John, want to give us the next one?
Absolutely. Sign of the Red Hand. It's a 1 cost attachment. It says, attached to your house card, if you're not running an agenda, Sign of the Red Hand gains, increase your draw cap by 1. Now, it always gives you one gold. I think we're going to see this in basically at least one of in every Lannister NA deck. This one gold is basically replacing a income location, and then it has an added bonus if you're not running an agenda, which means it's a very solid card.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's better than income locations against houses that have location control. So against Greyjoy, you'd rather see this card than, say, Queen Tessa's Chambers against, you know, same.
Well, no, because you could move it as an attachment.
Okay, yeah, sure.
It's unique, which gives it a lot of defense against attachment removal as well. So, you know, dragons won't hit it, which is nice.
Windstorm Marauders won't hit it, which is nice.
Well, here's the question, though. Are you running this over an increased levy?
I'm running this over Queen Cersei's Chamber.
I'm running both.
And a lot of people are running both.
And I honestly think that a lot of Lanny decks nowadays can draw for a turn quite easily.
No agenda, I'm running this above Queen Cersei's Chamber. Anywhere else, no. That influence.
Oh, yes.
In a no agenda, I think I'm running this over increased levy. Just barely, but yeah. I'm running one of these and two increased levy.
Most no agendas aren't running increased levy nowadays. So that's why I'm wondering whether this actually sees the play that you guys are saying. I'm not saying it's a bad card. I'm not saying it's inefficient. I'm saying people are running things like Cersei's Chamber. They're running them out of house and in their style deck.
Any location that I'm running that's one cost, I'm running this instead.
I think it's only playable with no agenda. Otherwise, it's just a bad location you can't set up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's actually also quite something to keep in mind. You can't set it up unlike most locations. And
that's probably the biggest drawback from it. Yeah.
Are you sure you want to be using up one of your precious attachment / event slots for this card? I mean, it's good, but I don't think it's amazing.
I agree, it's not amazing.
Would you trade this or an enslave when you're top decking turn six?
Not for enslave, no.
No, I think, and in most cases, when you're looking for additional income, you're running weaponsmiths. And I don't think it's a weaponsmith, even in a no agenda.
I hate weaponsmith, but all right.
So I'm actually of the opinion that this sees very little play.
This sees not a lot.
So this is Doria Sand, or Doria Sand, placing the other version that also had a picture of her with the Morningstar having smashed, or Flail having splashed blooded oranges. She's one cost, monocon, intrigue, one strength, Sand Snake and Bastard, and she has the response, after a Sand Snake character you control is killed, Doria Sand claims one power, limit three times per phase. Now, we've seen Joffrey pull his own weight in certain decks in the past. Not recently, mind you, but the core Joffrey that can get power every time a lord or lady dies.
Joffrey's more open than this.
Yeah, but
that this is a one cost, and that we have trait manipulation for Sand Snake specifically. I think that this... I agree. I don't think you can keep her around for that to pay off.
Sand Snake decks aren't good. Adding her does not make them good.
Well, I think the Sand Snake decks are getting there because of the response version and things like that. But I think that you're probably more likely to run the other Doria Sand, because she gives characters do not kneel to attack after you lose a challenge.
Which is awesome.
Which can be more fun. So this one can get you power. There might be a way to do fun things with it, but I don't think it does. And
I'm a Shaggy player. I love this kind of stuff, and it's not there.
I mean,
if someone proves me wrong, I'll send them some Beyond the Wall alternate art cards, but it's not happening.
I mean, one cost, we need is with an injury I got isn't completely unplayable, and she is useful when you're at 13/14 powers, because she stops your opponent from militarying you, because otherwise you just kill her and then claim the power.
She'll go in decks, but the decks will be bad.
I mean, yeah, she's competing with Lost Spearman, and she's not as good. So, yeah. All right, well, want to give us the next card then, Tagore?
Okay, so this is Watergarden Sentry, a one cost, two strength conscriptor. no icons. Challenges. New Water Garden Sentry to have participated in the current challenge as a defender. If you win the challenge, return Water Garden Sentry to your hand. Well, one, this is an absolute flavor fail. How the hell is a Water Garden Sentry a conscriptor? I think he doesn't seem to be recruiting anyone to the Martell.
Yeah, that's weird. And the art sucks, but go on.
He's okay, like, having... There's some really stupid shit. I mean, he's just a boring chump blocker that you could chuck in the way of a challenge to make sure your opponent doesn't get out of post power, I suppose, is what I can say that's good about him. I mean, he can't attack on his own without the aid of icon manipulation.
He was awesome in draft.
What?
He was great in draft.
How does he help you in draft?
He was a bunch of defenders that would dodge Valor.
Wildfire as well.
Yeah. So he was good for that. But in real Thrones, not so great.
I like how you call it real.
I will say this for this. So I think this is, generally speaking, a bad card. I think what it's intended to do is to fuel a different kind of Bloodthirst deck that actually uses characters and then has them for purposes but bounces them back to hand or kills them or sacrifices them.
That was what it was intended to do, but those decks don't work out.
Because people
only play Bloodthirst when it's broken. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what this card is for me. All right, John, want to give us the next one?
Sure. It is House Tully Footman. He's one cost, a military and a power icon. He's Stark, House Tully. If you control a unique House Tully character, House Tully Footman does not kneel to defend.
Speaking of boring chump blockers, no one.
Yeah, exactly. He's only good in Tully decks, and in Tully decks he's okay. We'll probably see a few of them. But in anything else, we will not see him played.
I mean, I don't really see the point of even running him in a Tully deck, because...
Well, just because your Tully search effects will find him, as well as the other things.
Yeah, but at this point, there are enough Tullys that you don't have to just run him.
Well, yeah, but how many one
there's costs? Yeah, Tullys that reduce based on the cost and stuff, so... I mean, he saw some value in Tully decks, just no other deck.
I mean, Stark doesn't have that many one-cost characters... Period, does it?
Oh, there's Hodor.
Not a Tully.
The Shaggy Dog.
All these are non Tullys. It's just
okay. If you're literally running Tullys, you can
Lucas
run.
Blackwood, yeah, I know, and the recruiter. But no, I think this guy actually potentially has a niche in Tully decks.
Like a That's really wicked janky Tully deck that I'm not
yes. sure. You're correct.
And his art is slightly better than the last couple. Cards, but still bad. Yeah, this is really
so, his art is still bad, and we only play him in a super specific deck type, so he's bad.
Hey, but does it make River Run good? Because now we have more one cost.
No. Is this me, or does most of the art in this set count?
Yeah,
like, you don't really have a good snapshot of the.
No. The next art's bad too. Yeah.
Who's the next? The next one is me. This is Witchfell Hearttree. This is a weird card to see in the before last chapter pack, but zero cost location, limited location in Stark. It is a Winterfell trait. Marshalling the Winterfell Hearttree to reduce the cost of the next Stark character you play this phase by one. This is a perfectly good card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have nothing against it. I would say it's maybe even slightly better than the Sea Tower, the one that we saw from Greyjoy, and I like that Greyjoy one.
This is better than every other house that has zero cost kneel to reduce location, because you can play Bear Island.
That's true. That's right. I hadn't considered that.
That's the only reason that this is better than the others, but the others were a good card, so this is a good card.
It's not necessarily better than Palace Fountains, because Martell's card.
Yeah.
Right? But aside from that, yeah, this is a very good card, but there's not much to say about it. That Bear Island thing was more insightful than I had lined out. That's all I got. And the art is also still ugly, so...
Yeah, it looks too summery for me. It looks like it's in the middle of the summer. for spring rather than a, you know, a wintry, noisy thingy.
I love the next card, though. Oh,
well, Tagore gets probably the first good art that we get to talk about.
And good card. It's sexy.
Low waste. So it's an event, cost arc only. Response, after doing a military challenge in which you control at least one sustain unique character, choose and discard from play one location controlled by the losing opponent. There's basically no quota for locations. It's good, but really has a fair amount of location control, and I'm not really sure it is preferable to play this over Frozen Solid. I mean, I think you play both, but I think in general you'd rather freeze a location than just blow it up. Except against Tarn. This is way better against Tarn. But, you know, against Martell, you don't really want to lay waste to Gaston Grey because you know that Martell has two more Gaston Greys in hand, and they're just, you know, you're going to play them once you lay waste them. But if you freeze the Gaston Grey, it's stuck there forever, and they cry, and they cannot Gaston your shit.
Yeah. Yeah, this, the comparison to make is that this is taking up an event slot, and this card is not going to outspeed vast majority of the time, or ever. There's a specific deck type we've talked about frequently called Grand Theft Location, but mm-hmm. I don't think this replaces Direct Assault in there. I don't think it replaces Frozen Solid in there. So I think it's even then, it's down the list. I like it from the fact that it mirrors No Quarter. I like it from the fact that it has decent art. I just think that it's kind of down on that list, and you're going to use other things first, and I'm not sure if you get to it.
Consider Condemned by the Council. It's does the sort of a similar sort of thing, you know, it's a one for one location control card. And it doesn't really see play. Like, even in houses that traditionally have very weak location control, like it'll probably see a 1x splash in Atlanta, No Agenda or Dark Rings, Dark Words. But yeah, even then it's not everywhere.
Oh, it's bad though. Okay. We are at Jogo. Targaryen. It's the Thraki, Queen's card. It is 4 cost for a 3 strength military and power icon. It has the following limited response. After you win a challenge with Joko and at least 2 other Dothraki characters participate as attackers, discard Joko to claim X power for your house. X is the number of cards in the losing opponent's hand. Limit 1 limited response per round. Wow, it sounds super cool. Claim a lot of power. The other Joko is so much better, it blows my mind.
Wow.
Because drawing cards is always good. In a Thraki deck, you want to get more cards in hand. This is a big finish move where you're already winning. I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think if he wasn't called Jogo, I'd probably consider 1x of him in a Thraki deck.
Sure, but if he was called Jogo.
If he was called, like, Gojo.
Sam.
I think Gojo.
Oh, Popo. But as Jogo, yeah, he's not good.
I mean, there's so many neat things you can envision doing with him.
Yeah, sure.
Like having your opponent have 15 cards in hand, feeding them to him with Much and More and Comet's Tail, the Dragon's Tail.
Dragon's Tail. I play that all the time.
But then you're playing so many bad cards to do this one-off claim 15 power.
And
if you're doing anything less than that, you
cancel
need 2 other Dothrakis in the challenge. You discard them to do it. The fact that it's a limited
response. He's starting a 4 coster to do that.
Oh, he's so bad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean,
to be fair, I think he could potentially see some play in melee.
Proved my early results.
Yeah,
as long as you can make sure that they don't cancel the limited response.
No,
he's to be a big flashy power grab effect.
It's out of the 3 other players, none of them will cancel that. No.
Let's say casual melee. I don't know.
Right. Oh, it's good in casual melee.
Right. We're going on to what is probably my favorite card of the pack.
Oh, so good.
This is a Dothraki as well. It's a Targaryen 3-cost braided warrior. He's a military power bicon. Only 2 strength. Only trait is Dothraki. And his text is, response, after Braided Warrior comes into play, search your deck for an attachment card and pay its printed gold cost to put it into play attached to a card you control. Then, shuffle your deck.
Nice.
Wow, is this empowering attachments in a way we haven't yet seen before. This is the most reliable attachment search. It is the easiest. It is the fastest. It is better than the Warlock that only works in Summer. And that was seeing play in certain combo decks.
Yep.
This allows you to hunt out a season if you want it. It lets
better.
You hunt out. I mean, you won't get to trigger
up that season.
But
oh, it does.
It does let you get a season.
Yes.
It lets you get Cal. It lets you get Sand Snake Veil and pay only one gold for it. It lets you get so many interesting things. This
That's
is a
the
card
power.
That
the out-of-house attachments.
So many deck building possibilities. I
Super
think
cool.
This card might actually make an infinite combo that I had in mind eventually work. This is a blast. I mean, it may break the game too. We'll see. I'll get back to you on that.
Someone's going to build a Beric deck with this guy, and everyone's going to want him banned.
He is so good for
Beric. Yeah.
And not just Beric. Other abuses are incredible.
Yeah. Honestly, I think I'm not a big fan of search effects like this in the game, just because I think it makes some really degenerate combo decks, like crazy Beric decks, slightly too reliable. But I do like that he does. That he only searches up attachments that goes on your cards, and that he cannot search up
Mel's favor.
Mel's favor. He's like, yeah, okay, I will take control of that character.
Have they made attachments viable? Not really, but they've made it so that if you get the attachment as a free card, you're interested.
Yeah, but I still think that the fact that they printed, you know, Mr. Viscerus back in Conquerors and Defiance kind of hurt attachments a lot. I mean, it didn't hurt as much as Tin Link, but the fact that you can just play a one-cost character with cards, like deal him, and block any attachment is just, you know...
Bastard's still a thing.
Yeah, that bastard
is still a thing. If people are smart, they're going to play more Bastard because of the Dire Wolves, because of the cards like this, where people are going to start thinking of comboing a whole bunch of attachments onto a single character.
Yeah, there are some Conquest possibilities with this card, too. Just, like, Conquest to charge just to run a couple of rated warriors and another fun card or two. No, I mean, this card is fun, and the art yep. still sucks, so...
Powerful card. Shitty art.
Tagore, on to the next.
The next card is a target location. It's Eastern Market. It's limited. It's marshalling. Discard Eastern Market from play to reduce the cost of the next three Dothraki or mercenary characters you play this phase by one each. So it's sort of like Seat of Power for Dothraki hordes.
Seat of Power. It's not the same.
But
Seat of Power is better.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like the discount on one character. One card is much better than discount on three different cards that have to have this specific trait.
Well, they can be mercenaries. That is worth noting because there are quite a few of those as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you're still only playing this in a Dothraki deck. Yeah, don't get it.
Yeah. You're playing three Dothraki in a turn, you probably are overextending slightly, and you're going to get hit by the Valor or Aftermath pretty hard.
This is the big thing that the Seat of Power has over this. I think. You know, Seat of Power is an amazing card that we see in almost every Bear deck. Mm-hmm. This we're going to see in not all Dothraki deck even.
Yeah.
So it's an okay card.
If you
card.
Want influence, you're not running it, right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to run Incinerates or if you're trying to run
this
some other events, you're still not running them.
Or just the jumping Dothraki guys.
Exactly.
Exactly, yep.
I think this is borderline. I think it might make one of in a Dothraki deck that's running influence, but
I've done the fiefdoms.
Certain Dothraki decks will run it, but they're very specific. I mean, in general, we're not going to see this card played.
All right. Well, next card then, John.
Bronze Yawn, or three cost military and power icon. He's got renown. He's neutral. House Aaron, Lord, text. After a castle plot card is placed in your use pile, choose and discard one power from a character.
He's okay.
I mean, three cost for two icons and renown isn't bad, but we don't see much play of the guy that already has that discards an agenda. Character agenda from people's house cards, so I'm guessing that this guy doesn't see any play.
Well, Fargo Hope does have some negative traits and price one. But,
he's not
seen play. Three renown isn't really enough these days. Like, if he was printed back in cycles one or two, I think
he'd be great. But now?
Yeah. Now the card pool is deep enough that you don't really. aren't very excited by it, to be cost it with Renown.
No, isn't that I think sad? The build is that he's slightly higher than Renown, in that you're planning on, if you're putting him in your deck, you're planning on triggering that response once or twice.
You're playing a
just sort of like double Renown.
Yeah. No, it's just power, it's not choosing gain of power.
Yeah, I know, but that's the power swing. The total power swing is still. Yeah.
But here's the thing. There's not enough good castle plots. He'd be good if there's good castle plots.
And he's only discarding from characters.
Still waiting for some more good castle plots.
Well, don't wait too long, because...
I'm holding my breath. I hope it's in the next chapter pack or I'm going to die.
Well, I mean, from a flavor standpoint, I do think it is nice that we do see some of the Veil Lords in the game at last. I mean,
yeah, so
all right,
nothing else has that.
So building up on the idea of Castle Plots moving to use pile, I get Robert Aaron. He was spoiled quite a long time ago. He is a zero-cost, zero-strength power monocon with a noble crest. He's a House Aaron Lord, and it's a response after a Castle Plot is moved to your used pile. Robert Aaron claims 2 power, limit once per round.
That's shitty art.
And again, shitty art. This is just not there. There's like a fact. Again, you know, the Sansa that we saw last, or the Elaine Stone that we saw last chapter pack, plus Robert Aaron, plus Jon Royce that we just saw, they all fit together. And if you're running a fairly heavy suite of castle plots, you're going to find out you're going to get a lot of power for this. You're going to be able to cycle them faster.
Sure,
Robert Aaron will get 2 power. Your opponent's going to lose power off their characters. But that is a really niche deck that we have no evidence that it would ever work. And so this card is not good enough to play any other time. Next card, then, I guess, would be Tagore.
All right, amazing. So this is the Bloody Gate. It's a 2-cost location with the Veil trait. Marshalling, near the Bloody Gate to reduce the cost of the next 2 cards or printed cost 4 or higher. You play this phase by 2 each. So this is sort of more support for the 4 costers or higher sub-theme. I think it potentially sees play in Lufin Apart.
I think it sees play in a bunch of decks. Any deck that would have even remotely considered the 2-cost locations that were in-house reduced by 2, plays this instead.
Yeah, but this not is that a billion many times decks better. Considered those.
Oh, no, they considered them. They just didn't put them in.
They just didn't put them in. But wasn't now it John Bruno that said something like, if my opponent plays one of those, I know I'm playing. They're playing a bad card?
I don't know. It's non-limited, which
helps. Somewhat better.
But
it's not getting the second trigger, so.
Yeah, but it relies on having 4 costs to put into play. Well, to play.
Yeah.
And reducing them each by 2 is fine, but that doesn't mean you need to have 2 4-costers in your hand.
I would put this 100% in my Martell AA deck as one of.
I would actually be even more likely to put it in a Martell Gaston Grey deck than a Martell Lufin Apart deck.
Sure, I agree. My Martell NA.
There, I can definitely bounce the Viper and Narian and so on, and then just play them back for dirt cheap.
Yep.
So
I can also see this in a big Stark Armies deck. You just like say, okay, drop flank, drop fleet, have fun.
Yeah. I think this one does see play. I think the fact that it's unique means that
we'll see one of not much
decks. Exactly, you're not getting it reliable in that many decks.
But not every deck.
This card is going to be John.
Kings of Mountain and Vale. It
now,
is
you're
a
still
plot.
Holding your breath, right, John?
I'm still holding my what?
Your breath for a good castle plot?
Yeah. Neutral castle. After this plot is placed in your use pile, draw 1 card and discard 1 card at random from each opponent's hand. That's probably the best castle plot I've seen yet. That's solid. That is a 2-card swing.
Stats, John? Stats?
4-3-1.
I think it's good. I'm not sure it's the best. I think this
This is good, Tagore.
I know
this
it's good.
I'm not better than the river plot where you just got to draw 1 card. Now you're drawing 1 card and discarding a card. This is good.
But I think that the steely one is much better. The one where you say where
taking
you
captive.
Yeah, taking captive is better because you
taking captive is solid. But people can play around this. You can't play around this. 4-3-1. You can't play around taking captive. You got some information already. You
taking
around it.
Yeah, but taking captive, you're stealing a three coster. You have to, like, essentially a six gold swing. This one's a card and a
two card swing.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's okay. Like, I can see it seeing play in, say, a Stark deck that just really wants a bit extra draw and has nothing better to do with his plot deck.
Don't underestimate the random discard from your opponent's hand.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, that, I mean, potentially?
Not but potentially.
It's a delayed round of discard.
Sure, but if you play this turn one, they're not going to be playing out their whole hand.
Yeah, but if you're playing this turn one, you're not.
So if we're going another effect. Yeah.
Or something yeah. crazy.
I mean, it's not the best plot in the game, but it's all right.
I think the best, or one of the best, I agree with John, one of the best castle plots. It's a castle plot, makes you look at castle plots again. And then you think about it for a little bit longer, like I just did over the last 30 seconds, and you realize, yeah, two-card swing is really nice. Waiting a turn for it is okay. It's enough to offset it. It's probably balanced, which doesn't put it in the top 20 plots that you're going to consider for most decks. It just still puts it in the top sort of 40 or 50.
We'll see this in decks, though. People will play this plot.
People will play this, and if you're running any tech that manipulates castles, like Lane Stone, this looks even better.
Yes, but the rest of them, not as great. I agree.
But yeah, I think that I haven't seen actually all that many castles see play to date, and I don't think this one pushes them over so that you're using two or three of them. I think this is good.
Yeah.
And we'll see some play, but not as much as
yeah. If we wanted to see castle play, we're going to have to see one or two really good plots in the very last chapter pack to go along with this. Crossing the castle forward will have to come out to make castles viable. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, what are you, if you're open, or not necessarily opening, but if you're playing Kings of Mountain and Vale, knowing your opponent's going to lose a card next turn, what are you flipping into the turn after that? A Search and Detain? Into the only card he's going to flip into? Or?
If they have nothing in their hand, maybe, but most of the time I'm trying to get them to discard another card in some way, shape, or form.
Not really sure. I don't think there's an obvious like follow-up plot to this one.
No, I don't think there really is.
No.
I mean,
not obvious. I agree.
Unlike with, say, the 4-7 one, Holding Council, where there's a lot of crazy shenanigans you can do. Like, you could Holding Council into Time for Ravens, Holding Council into
any of the tasks.
Yeah, and then drop a Pyromancer's Cache into play if you're playing Stark. But no, this one doesn't really seem to have many crazy synergies. It's just...
Even taking captive, you know, you're going to see an aftermath, I'll say 70% of the time after taking captive.
Yep.
So, the end verdict for me for this chapter pack is that there are, you know, Milksnake's fairly solid, House Tully Footman has a niche, Winterfell Hardtree has a niche, Bitterbridge Encampment, amazing, Iron Island Reavers has a niche.
The big one is Bitterbridge Encampment.
Super excited about the game.
I'd say...
What is? I mean, those are the things that jump out at me. This is a middling chapter pack with horrible art. Possibly the most consistently bad art out of any chapter pack we've reviewed on this cast. In fact, I'm certain it is.
I agree with that. Bad art. If you're one of the artists, I'm sorry for saying this, but be ashamed.
I think, as both of you said, I think the card of the packs are the Bridge of Encampment, the Braided Warrior, and Milksnakes, with Lay Waste potentially coming in as fourth. If you're not running Frozen Solid, or if you're expecting a lot of Targ and a lot of Conquest.
And so, John?
Yeah.
I think the pack overall was weak, except for a couple exceptional cards, which we already talked about.
All right, so we've only got one last pack to get impressed by. Suppose that'll be fairly shortly, too, I think. It looks like it's likely to be about 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, before Gen Con. Exciting. Right.
Actually be legal for the last British regional, which would be interesting.
Yeah,
be
whole legal bunch of regionals.
A lot of regionals in the States and North America. Yeah. Okay, well, Tagore, thank you very much for joining us. Closing comments. John, last couple of weeks we skimped on the closing comments. I actually have a few this week, but I'll let you start us off?
Oh, no, go ahead, Alex. You can be the first closing comments.
Oh, you're very generous. The first closing comment that I wanted to make is that there are a couple of really big tournaments as we're basically entering on the cusp of regional season.
Oh, that's what I was going to talk about, specifically the New York City.
Of course you were, John. So the first weekend of regionals is the weekend of May 2nd, and that actually kicks off two tournaments in North America, one in New York at the Complete Strategist, where signups are already on AGOT cards and Card Game DB as well, if you'd like to join. And the other in Toronto, in Canada. So that's the only two regionals I know of that weekend. There's also, that same weekend, a big international tournament in the Netherlands. And that's the Dockside Brothel Days on May 2nd and 3rd. And I think they've now spoiled most of their alternate art cards, these sort of anime traditional Dutch adaptations of Game of Thrones characters.
Yeah, they did a playmat. Playmat, yeah.
The playmat had Jon Snow in the Red Light District and Ygritte. And
looking up at Ygritte, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cute. So that is also that weekend. I think we may have a guest on to talk about that a little bit more in the next week or so if we can coordinate a schedule. The organizers have reached out to us before, but we definitely wanted to mention it this far in advance. So if it's something that you could think of traveling to, you should look into it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other one I have on the list is Milana Goes to Stalik, which is the weekend of May 15th, so that's 2 weeks after that, but still on the radar as one of the big tournaments of the early regional season.
So since we're talking about regionals, Alex, which ones are you going to be at?
Yeah.
Ottawa. It's got three.
I have every intention of attending at least one regional. I still don't know which one it will be. It's just not been a very good season for that. And it turns out that one of the Montreal or Ottawa ones, I'm actually in Montreal again the day before to fly out from Montreal. So this is the same thing that happened last year. It's just during a conference season for me as an academic. So I still have to cement all my other travel plans before I can choose a regional. What about yourself?
I'll be going to all three Ottawa/Montreal regionals, I think, if I can.
But not the Toronto one on May 2nd.
Not the Toronto one or the New York one on May 2nd.
All right. Anything else as closing comments?
That's it. How about you give us a snappy sign-off now, Alex?
I did it last week.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
What, were you really expecting an Easter egg after that botched intro that's basically an Easter egg of its own? And yes, that is the NHL playoffs in the background.